The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the sunny heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. I'm laughing because I'm looking out the windows, and I don't know. Is it sun? Well, I guess it is. See, there's that sunshine, not sunshine, half glass full, half glass empty. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of snacks not provided thing.
It's a Tuesday afternoon as opposed to the normal Sunday afternoon that we do this. It is mm-hmm. September the 18th of 2012, and it is a sunny day, mostly sunny, a few clouds out there, but no chemtrails. So the clouds are of natural origin, at least as far as I can tell with my non-meteorological background. But many things happening around the world today. You might say the clouds are gathering in other parts of the world, and we had wanted to delay a couple of days to give us a better perspective, hopefully a little more information on what's happening in the Middle East especially, and also because I was off singing with my quartet most of the day, Sunday afternoon. So,
and then yesterday, well, you were, and you work hard. And then yesterday, I don't know, day got away from me. The next thing I knew, I was falling asleep on the couch.
But
that's what happens when you get old.
Yes, there are days when you just need the nap. Mm-hmm. You know, I could never understand when I was a kid why my dad would spend beautiful Saturday and Sunday afternoons asleep on the couch with the Cubs game on Channel 9 in the background instead of outside playing like a normal person.
I know.
But, you know, dad
we
was...
We don't even have the Cubs game.
It's right. Well, the way they played back in the 70s, that was a good cure for insomnia. So anyway, since we've last spoken via this medium, there have been many developments around the world. And as usual, most of them are not what they appear to be or not what the powers that be are telling us they are.
There's stuff going on behind the scenes all over the place.
Sure.
You know.
And we're just
one
not very...
of them. One of them has to do with a little movie.
Yeah.
That was made, I think, in somebody's basement.
For about $15.
Yeah.
And change. We're told by the President of the United States, ostensibly the executive branch of the most powerful government on the planet, with access to the most extensive intelligence sources known to planet Earth, that this uprising, which claimed the life of the American ambassador Chris Stevens and three others in Benghazi, Libya, and has led to violent protests in Cairo and in Yemen and in Tunisia,
mm-hmm.
is because of this stupid movie called The Innocence of Muslims.
A movie which has been on the internet since July.
June.
Oh, yes, June. Maybe late June.
Yeah.
For some reason, July. But you're right, for a long time. So it's been percolating out there for a few months.
Right.
Very few hits, so to speak. And suddenly mm-hmm. it's all over, frankly, I think is being used as the excuse, the MacGuffin, mm-hmm. as
right.
to what's really going on here.
Yeah.
Today, however, did you see the story that Egypt wants to try
mm-hmm.
everybody who's had anything to do with either making or promoting this movie?
Yeah. The general prosecutor of Egypt has issued arrest warrants for seven Egyptian Coptic Christians and American pastor Terry Jones. And we'll use the term pastor loosely. This is the fellow who has been very outspoken. Well, he was the guy. Didn't he burn the Quran?
Well, he wanted to. He claimed he was going to.
Oh, right.
He may have actually ended up doing it. But at the last minute, he said, no, I've changed my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, Terry Jones claimed he was contacted by the filmmaker to promote the video, and my gut feeling is that Terry Jones is just jumping on this bandwagon because it's an opportunity for publicity again. Among those charged is the fellow who is whose face we still haven't seen yet, Nicola Beselli Nicola.
Well, actually, I have found a picture of him. I didn't find it myself. It was in a news article. He appears to be an Egyptian-looking gentleman. He originally claimed that he was an Israeli Jew who was living here now.
Sam Basile? Yeah.
Yes, and that the movie had been financed by 20 investors. Was it 20 investors? But it was $5 million that he had received from these investors. And the movie could not have – if it cost $5,000 – I'd be really surprised. I do know that there is a paper trail showing that actors were paid very nominal fee. Mm-hmm. You know, the basic standing in the background sort of actor. I think they usually get paid about, well, whatever minimum wage is, to be honest.
Yeah.
So not much.
Which means they clearly are not members of whatever, the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, even the extras in this film are, well, you put it very well. You said that back when our daughter was in the sixth grade, she and her friend messing around with iMovie and the iBook would have been able to produce a better film. Mm-hmm.
And you and I have a green screen now, or
yes.
You can honestly just paint your walls green. If you light it correctly and make sure that, and don't use anything close to that color, then you're fine.
Mm-hmm. So this... the trailer is what actually made its appearance on YouTube in July. The film had a one-time showing at a small theater in Hollywood in June, attracted, about four viewers?
Maybe.
There was an attractive young lady who was paid to stand outside and try to encourage people to come in and see the movie. But the point is that this movie has been around for several months, and for this to be held up by the President of the United States and by our ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, as the reason that these that the American ambassador to Libya was killed is, I think, an insult to our intelligence.
Well, not only that, but also, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
but
go ahead.
We're getting interviews on Al Jazeera with the Libyan prime minister, who says that he understands that there were foreigners who were there and that this had been planned at least several days in advance of the event, and the Egyptian authorities who are saying that, and people on the ground who were interviewed, also by Egyptian press, that the Muslim Brotherhood had announced a gathering several days in advance. So it wasn't that this spontaneous uprising of, oh my gosh, look what they're showing. Now, I will say this, that my understanding is that there was a gentleman in Egypt, I think, who put on the, the captions, the translated, because it's in English, and put the Arabic translations for the local viewers to watch. And I think all he ran was what was available up until a few days ago on YouTube. And that has been what has been supposedly inciting these riots. The White House says, no, we didn't have any advance notice. But there are those in the Middle East who are saying, you did have advance intelligence. Mm-hmm. And there are those in the administration who say, yes, we did have advance intelligence. And, of course, it's being said now, well, it wasn't actionable.
Yeah. Fox News and the McClatchy newspaper group have reported that a source on the ground in Libya said that there was no demonstration outside the U.S. consulate in Benghazi prior to the attack, which contradicts the claims of the administration that this assault grew out of a spontaneous gathering. Yes, a spontaneous gathering in Egypt, in Libya, usually involves rocket-propelled grenades.
Yeah. I carry mine everywhere I go.
You buy those at the flea market, just anywhere. I think it's an attempt by the administration to cover up what could be used for political gain by the Romney campaign as the logical outgrowth. And we would have predicted this had we, really been, that concerned with who was going to win the presidential election. But, I mean, you could.
And the reason we're not is because it doesn't matter who wins.
Exactly.
It's going to be the same story.
Yeah. Two heads in the sock puppet. This is what happens when you remove the strongman who keeps the pressures, the social pressures under control in Libya and Tunisia and Egypt, and allow the Muslim Brotherhood to rise to power or other radical Islamist groups, which is was predictable. I mean, we predicted this in Iraq, and I'm surprised we haven't seen more violence in Iraq. But I think what we will ultimately see in Iraq is a Shia majority. You know, if they truly are allowed to govern themselves, because, well, the majority of people there are Shia, and we will have liberated Iraq from the tyranny of Saddam Hussein to create Iran's new best friend. But by allowing the Muslim Brotherhood to rise to power in Egypt, we have essentially allowed the parent organization for many of the radical groups in the Middle East to take control over the potentially the most powerful nation in the Middle East outside of Israel.
Now, when I watched the interview with the Prime Minister of Libya, he made it very clear that there were foreigners, I'm putting that in air quotes, who were involved in the demonstrations. The next day, that interview was being dissected all over the mainstream media, and it was determined by the White House that it was Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda from the Arab Peninsula that was involved. They were the foreigners who were there. So now it's being spun that this was actually grassroots Al-Qaeda protest. So I'm not really sure, you know, which direction to look.
Well, again, Fox News is quoting an intelligence source, and the McClatchy newspapers actually interviewed a Libyan security guard who is being treated for injuries sustained in the attack. Both who say there was nothing happening prior to the attack. The attack was launched, was coordinated. The fact that it happened on the anniversary of the September 11th attacks, oh, coincidence, according to the Obama administration.
Yes, but of course, that event at the consulate in Benghazi was not the only thing going on for that day and the next few days. There were fires all over the place, so to speak. I think you mentioned all the various Yemen, Sudan, Tunis, you named them off. And I mean, was it Al-Qaeda in all of those countries who were, you know, organizing on the ground?
That's
sort of a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
If we're to believe it was Al-Qaeda in one country, shouldn't we be expected to assume it's Al-Qaeda in all of the other countries that seem to erupt at the same time over this film? This 13-minute YouTube trailer.
Yeah, that's what they would have us believe. I think what we're seeing is just somebody put out a hit. They saw an American government official who was exposed in a position that wasn't defensible, obviously, and came at him with RPGs and heavy weapons. The security guards hired to protect him while he was at the consulate in Benghazi weren't up to the task of defending
him. I'm glad you mentioned the security guards. A couple of things have come out since then. One is the claim that they weren't allowed to have bullets in their guns. And the other one is a story circulating that, they were called Blackwater, then they were called Z, and now they're called Academie, or Academy. I'm not sure how they pronounce it. It's sort of a Frenchy kind of spelling, but that they have been negotiating a contract to guard the embassies and the consulates, too, I would assume, and that it's paperwork in the diplomatic corps that has been delaying this implementation for 2 months. So I guess there what Academy is saying is, if we'd been there, this wouldn't have happened.
It may still have happened, but it may have been more of a fight. But you know, the bottom line is it's not the YouTube video that prompted this. I mean, let's face it, there was much wider distribution of Bill Maher's movie *Religulous*, which had some very in typical Bill Maher style, some very snarky and snide things to say about Islam. And, you know, what about the South Park, the South Park representation of Muhammad?
Well, I think that drew a few angry remarks, too. But
it didn't draw the assassination of an American government official.
Exactly. Yeah. And here's what kills me is the I think it's the Ayatollah from Iran who actually came out. And he doesn't make too many speeches anymore, at least aimed at the American press. I think he is the one who came out yesterday and said that there should be an international law saying that no one can speak out against the Prophet or against Allah.
Mm-hmm. And you know,
we live in the United States. We have free speech. You can't tell us mm-hmm. that we can't say what we want to say. Now, you and I, we're not going to. We try to be as fair-minded as we can, but we make no bones about the fact that we believe Jesus Christ is the only way, the truth, and the life.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little trouble with a reaction from Islam or from some Islamists, and that's the radical segment of those who follow the Prophet Muhammad,
mm-hmm.
This reaction that says, if you say anything that I don't like, I get to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
That is so not what Christians are all about, and I pray that that's how all Christians react. We've been maligned. Jesus Christ has had all sorts of things thrown at him. The cross has been peed on. It's been, mm-hmm. I mean, you can just about name it. And we are expected to just sit and take it.
Mm-hmm.
And we do often speak out about it, but we generally don't go around trying to kill people over it. And we don't tell the world, if you say anything against our Savior,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have to kill you.
Exactly. But I think we're seeing in the West, because we're already seeing it in Canada, a movement to criminalize speech that is critical of another's beliefs.
Include speech that's critical of Christians?
Well, no, because the speech that would be criminalized is any speech that makes a claim of exclusivity to the truth. So if you say, you know, Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through him, well, you've just put down all of the other religions out there that also claim to have access to the truth, whether exclusive or not. And this gets back to a book that I've mentioned several times in this program, Lars Walker's novel, Wolf Time, in which he... I'll plug it again because I love the book. I'm going to have to read it a third time. He manages to weave together Norse mythology with social commentary, and he wrote the book in the late 90s. And the man, if not a prophet, was at least a seer, because he saw what was coming. And we're, again, seeing this in Canada already with their human rights panels. You dare preach on the sections of the Bible, for example, that label homosexuality as an abomination, then, you violated their human rights.
Well, except that that's how Islamists feel.
Exactly. And what we're going to see eventually, and this is one of the little things that Lars Walker wrote into the world that he created for Wolf Time, was a United States in which religious freedom means no religion gets to claim exclusivity, and we're open to all religions, which means you can't be critical of any.
We'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But that's a direction that there are those within our culture who would read that novel and say, well, yeah, that's a pretty good idea, actually.
So it's a big tent.
Right.
For everybody but us.
Yes, or anybody who claims exclusive access to the truth. And presumably that would also include, Muslims and Jews, presumably. But it doesn't seem that that's the way it plays out. Now, maybe we're biased because of our perspective. So, but presumably that would be the way things will ultimately go. But the powers and principalities that work behind the scenes always seem to have a target painted on the backs of those who say, Jesus is the way.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, but we knew that. Yeah, well, exactly. We knew the job was dangerous when you took it. I mean, Jesus said, look, expect it. They hated me. They're supposed to love you. Come on. What are you thinking? Speaking of messages, and there was a story that came out today in, was it today? No, actually, I'm sorry. This came out Friday in the New York Daily News. Just heard about it this morning. Our embassy in Cairo has been reading the Twitter feed of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, which is, of course, in Arabic. Perhaps the Muslim Brotherhood didn't think that the American embassy would actually have Arabic speakers on staff. But lo and behold, we actually do. And some of the messages that the Muslim Brotherhood are sending out in Arabic are supportive of the protesters in Cairo. In English, the tweets are, you know, expressing concern about the potential harm caused by the protests. But in Arabic, they're actually encouraging them. So,
well, that goes along with the claims by some who have told reporters from Egyptian newspapers mm-hmm. that this was all planned. Mm-hmm. You know, meet us on Friday after prayers and bring your RPGs.
Yeah, we're having a party.
Role-playing game?
Yeah.
I love Zelda.
MMO. Mega ordinance.
Well, many more things to talk about. This is going on, but you know what else is going on? There is a brand new, unannounced, annual, brand new and unannounced, mm-hmm. annual exercise taking place near the Straits of Hormuz.
Oh, yes. And this is the one that's including ships from 25 different nations?
Well, I think it's up to 30 now, and maybe 35 by the time we finish this.
Or maybe just 33.
But
we'll see. Yeah, everybody wants in on this action.
Supposedly, they're doing minesweeping now. Mm-hmm. Or mind sweeping, I don't know, it's one or the other, and or both. And the exercise being played out started on Sunday, which was Rosh Hashanah, mm-hmm. and ends, strangely enough, 12 days later. Well, that takes us right up to Yom Kippur.
Very interesting. The Brits have a contingent of minesweepers and a destroyer in there. United States Navy has vessels involved in this fleet, other nations with ships taking part in the 12-day exercise, France, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, and about 30 others.
30 others? They are up to 33.
Well, I'm just saying that the article here that I'm looking at says 25, but
this as of this morning, it said 30.
Okay.
It was brand new, brand new.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, this is quite a lot of naval power, considering that at the widest point, the Straits of Hormuz are only 21 miles wide. It would be difficult for all of these ships to navigate in such a confined space, because some of these ships are pretty big.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any coincidence that this is taking place while tensions in the region are heightened.
No. And you know, there was a story that came out today that if it's true that Iran now has a drone that is capable of 24-hour flight, so it can go 24 hours away and fire rockets.
Fire rockets, huh?
Fire rockets.
Yeah. Well,
missiles...
I guess keep reading about how much fun it is for our guys who get to shoot missiles at you know, people in Somalia, Yemen, and
they've seen Syria
Pakistan,
on it too.
Yes, and they want to be able to do their own droning.
Buttons.
Yeah.
Well, do I understand this correctly? If a drone, I don't know how fast they fly. Does that mean that definitely can reach Israel, but maybe even could reach some of our assets between here and the California coast or parts of Europe?
I guess it would depend on airspeed. Most of those drones don't fly that fast.
No, but 24 hours is a long time to get to fly.
Right.
Now, 24 hours could just mean that it's, you know, patrolling.
Yeah. Yeah. And presumably you want the drones back so that only, you know, 12 hours out and back.
Well, I don't know if it's a suicide mission.
Well, But
poor little drones.
So things are heating up in the Middle East is the bottom line there. And while that is going on, we are also seeing tensions in this is something most of us couldn't even conceive of. The Japanese and the Chinese are fussing at each other in a pretty pretty intense way.
So intense that some of the Japanese companies have been pulling out of major cities where the rioting is going on there in China. You know, there are a lot of, well, especially, electronics companies and
automobile companies,
yeah,
Toyota,
well,
Honda.
Precisely.
Yeah.
some of them are pulling out because their windows are being smashed and their lives are being threatened.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was curious to see what Tom Paine, who's been a guest on The View from the Bunker several times, the author of the book The Template of Time, had to say about this. And he actually quoted from a blog post he did almost 2 years ago to the day, September 20th of 2010, and pointed out that back in the mid-70s, Japan and China were negotiating a peace and friendship treaty. And that's kind of a big deal, because back in the late 30s, the Japanese army rampaged through China. It still was it referred to the rape of Nanking, the Nanking
yes.
province, and committed some pretty horrific acts against the Chinese. And the Chinese haven't forgotten. China is now has an economy that is rivaling Japan's in size, if not efficiency. So the nationalist sentiment inside China apparently is really growing stronger and has become quite strong here in recent years. But back in the mid-70s, they were negotiating this treaty, and it collapsed in 1975. So Tom Paine wrote 2 years ago, September of 2010, that when the template's new direction phase approached in 2005, because the way he interprets the patterns of time in the Bible, there's an initiation phase, a new direction phase, and then a culmination phase. And those appear in fairly predictable patterns. The new direction phase occurred and approached in 2005. A strange eruption of anti-Japanese sentiment swept China. It's difficult to explain why it happened then and not before. In brief, Chinese companies that did business with Japan were vandalized, as were Japanese billboards and stores stocking Japanese products. The cause? Among them, and this echoes what we're seeing today with the protests in the Middle East being blamed on a 13-minute lousy YouTube video. The cause among them was the Japanese approval of a history book for its school system that whitewashes the many atrocities perpetrated by Japan's Imperial Army on China and Korea. But this textbook was simply being reauthorized by the government. It first appeared in 2001. Now, again, remember, this was 2005 when this new direction phase began. Why weren't there demonstrations then? And the textbook was only used by 0.04%, 0.04% of Japanese junior high schools. So why was it such an emotional touchstone in 2005? And then he goes on to, and again, quoting from his blog post of 2 years ago, he went on to predict a significant setback in Chinese-Japanese relations somewhere around the year 2010. And if you've listened to the interviews with Tom, you'll know that those dates generally have a 2 or 3 year window, plus or minus. So here we are in 2012, and we appear to be reaching the culmination phase, the conclusion of this sequence. The fight is now over the Senkaku Islands, which are a few little pieces of rock that stick out of the sea between Japan and China, and both nations are claiming them as their own. But they appear to be sitting right on top of a significant oil and gas reserve.
And that's the big thing. And sorry, I've been sitting here trying to figure out how to get out of this pop-up window that was covering the story I was trying to read, and there was no way to get out of it. I had to sign up for the newsletter. Please, if you design websites, don't do that.
Yeah.
It's a story from actually September 12th, and this sort of kicked off about the same time as the writing. There was what they believe is an assassination attempt on the president-elect.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because Tom mentioned in his article here that he disappeared, just dropped out of sight for about a month, and only just this week came back into the public eye.
He did disappear for a while, and maybe it was because he had a feeling something was going on. But when he reappeared, almost one of the first things that happened to him was that his car was rammed and run off the road.
Oh.
Yeah. So they're assuming that was an assassination attempt. This article from the 12th isn't. I'm just going to X out of your.
Signed up.
I'm leaving your site. Don't do that.
So things are getting very tense over there.
And I think it has to do with pop-up windows.
It could be.
Things are getting tense in so many parts of the world. We've got also what's going on in the Sinai. Mm-hmm. And you don't see a whole lot about that over here either. There is a presence in the Sinai that it goes against every treaty.
Yeah.
Nobody should be there. And mm-hmm. yet, you know, there should be peacekeepers, so to speak, there. But there are these little skirmishes taking place all the time. And now we've got a boss who is saying that he's thinking mm-hmm. about yeah. revoking the Oslo Accords.
Right. Well, like they've been so peaceful
yeah,
since they signed those accords. Yasser Arafat basically threw him out the window years ago when he declared the Intifada. But it's almost as though the world is just anxious for somebody to slug somebody so that we can just, okay, drop the gloves and have a hockey game break out on the global scale. And I don't mean to, you know, be too flippant about this because because there are a lot of people who could potentially be in harm's way and suffer horribly because of this. So
very much so. In fact, we've received emails from listeners and friends who have loved ones, sons, daughters who are being deployed overseas.
Mm-hmm.
And at least one is involved in the FAST group. That this is quick responders that go to areas that need somebody, well, fast. Please pray for everybody over there. We really don't want anyone in harm's way. But I do know that that's simply the way geopolitics works, sadly mm-hmm. enough. Diplomacy sometimes doesn't do it. Although, I would like to see, frankly, I'd like to see the diplomats slug it out. I mean, if we're going to, say, go to war over something, instead of sending young men and women to die,
mm-hmm.
let's send the diplomats in there and, you know, a little tag team wrestling.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Cage match?
Yeah.
Or over-the-top rope battle royal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the over-the-top rope, that'd be better. Well, it raises some interesting questions, though, because the world economic situation is staggering right now. And I mean that in the sense of a drunkard, staggering.
Mm-hmm.
The European situation, the Eurozone is still trying to figure out how to extricate itself from the mess that it's created, you know, Greece and Spain and Portugal and Ireland. The Chinese economy has slowed significantly over the last year, and that's had an impact here in the U.S. and here in Heartland, in fact, because a lot of coal that comes out of the ground in Kentucky, Indiana, and southern Illinois winds up in China because the coal from the Midwest tends to be higher in sulfur. Combined with the warm winter that we had here in the U.S. last year, many of the mines in the Midwest and in the Appalachians, West Virginia and Kentucky, began stockpiling huge reserves of coal that they didn't need. I mean, they don't get anything for just digging it up and leaving it sit in a big pile. You have to sell it to somebody who wants to burn it. And between the Chinese economy slowing down, their steel industry uses American coal, between the lowered demand, reduced demand for American power, which is predominantly coal-fired, the coal industry has taken a hit. So
the EPA rulings haven't helped either.
Well, no, the EPA hasn't helped either. But my point is that further disruption in the Chinese economy, and apparently there are some in China who are protesting the United States military presence in East Asia. We still have bases over there in Japan and Korea, and there are some who believe that that has emboldened Japan to claim these islands that the Chinese believe are rightfully theirs. So a lot of American products are made in factories in China. What happens if Walmart, for example, suddenly can't get all of the stuff that are made in those Walmart factories there because people start throwing rocks at the windows of the Walmart factories and workers like they're doing with the Japanese factories there?
Oh, that would be interesting.
Yes, it would. That could really put her. Suddenly we'd have to buy shoes made here in the United States, which would be a little more expensive. Suddenly we'd have to start buying electronics that are made places other than China, if there are any.
It would be cheaper in the long run, though, if it caused genuine American job creation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And interestingly, we've been repatriating some of those jobs in China with the growth of the Chinese middle class, because real wages in China have been increasing. There have been American companies here that have said, you know, even though we have to pay our workers more per hour, we don't have the expense for shipping the goods across the ocean. Quality issues can be addressed a lot more quickly, a lot more cheaply than, and frankly, not to disparage the Chinese, but there's a different standard for quality control in the U.S. than there is in China for many products, at least with the guys that I deal with in the trades that deal with the steel and so forth.
Well, I'll agree with that one. But, I think there's something interesting going on, though. Yeah. Usually right about now when everything's going awry in the world, when he was still alive, Kim Jong-il would suddenly jump up from the little task bar at the bottom and want attention. We've not really seen that from Kim Jong-un, but there was a story a couple of weeks ago that he might have died. Now, I haven't seen anything more on it, so I'm guessing that it was just one of those sort of strange stories that, you know, we've seen stories, I've seen stories about, you know, well-known actors who have died, and they're perfectly alive.
Yeah, yeah.
But the story that came out today that is connected to this is that Russia has chosen to forgive the majority of North Korea's debt.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
So Vladimir Putin is trying to curry favor with North Korea. North Korea has essentially been sort of the sock puppet for China, many, many years.
Sort of the junkyard dog.
Yeah, yeah, for decades. And it looks like Vladimir Putin would like very much to, well, maybe be able to control that sock puppet.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I don't know, you would know this better than I, the North China Sea disputed area, is that close to North Korea?
Well, let me see if I can pull up a map here really quick. I actually don't, but I found, let me look, images.
I just wondered if Putin is going to now ask, we'd like to really, you know, if we could, well, maybe have a base there.
We could help you develop this this area.
Yeah, you guys don't have a whole lot of money, and the U.S. doesn't want to help you.
Gazprom could certainly, it's actually the East China Sea. Actually relatively close to Okinawa. A little northwest of Okinawa. Japan calls them the Senkaku Islands. China calls them the, I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, the Diaoyu. D-I-A-O-Y-U. Diaoyu.
Sounds good to me. Guess. Forgive us, we don't speak the language.
Yeah. The gas field is north and west of Okinawa. The disputed islands are due west of Okinawa and a little northeast of Taiwan. I wonder if the Taiwanese are saying, hey, wait a minute, because they're actually closer to Taiwan than they are to either of those other two nations.
Well, I'm totally off there trying to get throw North Korea in there. That has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But I did think that was really interesting, and I'd like to know what exactly, frankly, you don't forgive debt for nothing. There's no free lunch.
No, and especially not when you're dealing with Vladimir Putin. Yeah, you've got Japan. The gas field is due south of South Korea and, again, northeast of Taiwan. And the little islands there that sort of are in the middle of all of this are, closer to Taiwan than they are to China or Japan. But, it could be interesting because Vladimir Putin has certainly used Russia's abundant resources of natural of energy as a geopolitical weapon, and he's been pretty shrewd about it. And it makes you wonder. I mean, the Chinese have their own national petroleum company, and the Japanese have companies that would be more than capable of developing that gas field as well. So I don't know that the Russians are going to have any kind of stake, be able to, you know.
Yes. I have my hand up again.
Yes, Mrs. Gilbert.
There is another story out that actually is also out of Russia today, and that is that they are claiming they have uncovered a diamond field that is going to produce about, it says, and I literally say, trillions of carats. They reveal the vast diamond source under a 62-mile-wide asteroid crater, which could supply world markets for the next 3,000 years.
Hmm.
Those are a lot of diamonds.
That would really distort the global diamond market, though.
Yes, it would, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Because, it's all based on supply and demand. I mean, diamonds are expensive because they're desirable, but also because they're relatively rare.
Right.
And
a lot of diamonds
come
from South Africa, do they not?
Yes. Well, and other parts of Africa.
And
they're
actually
blood diamonds.
Yes. And there are mining disputes taking place in mm-hmm. parts of South Africa right yep. now.
This, yeah. That, well, that would be a very interesting development because at one point in the history of the world, aluminum was considered a very, very valuable metal. And now it's like we realize, oh, this is the most naturally occurring, you know, metal on the planet. And that's why it's relatively, relatively cheap.
So will diamonds go the way of aluminum?
Well, I don't know. But certainly would give...
Will we have diamond foil?
It would give Putin the power to manipulate the global diamond market by controlling how much he chooses to release on the world markets.
Well, and frankly, that's why I'm saying this is the story coming out of Russia. Mm-hmm. This is, I didn't get this from a spurious website. This is from the Daily Mail. Well, okay, might be. Considering that they're also really worried about those photos of the Duchess of Cambridge.
Yeah. Well, you know, anyone, just one quick comment on that. Anyone who thinks they've got any privacy in this world anymore, especially if you're famous, is just naive or stupid.
Look, Sam walks out the back door.
Yeah, paparazzi. The paparazzi are always around the backyard.
If only I could speak that well. He's leaving on that one.
Yeah, that's not. He says, I have no comment.
So undignified.
Talk to my spokesperson. What else is going on around the world? Another zombie apocalypse situation or incident. There was a, so I'm going to find the story here real quickly. This is from the Poconos area in northeast Pennsylvania, east of Scranton. And this is kind of weird, but I'll share this. Full disclosure, I have a standing Google News search for the phrase naked bleeding man. And one of the hits that popped up was a story that, now this newspaper's given me this same pop-up. You can't see this story. From about a week ago, this occurred. A man from Doylestown, Pennsylvania, attacked a woman in the town of Hawley, which, again, is east of Scranton in far northeast Pennsylvania. 20-year-old man pulled his car behind a house on early Friday morning. And this would have been a week ago Friday. If I can see the calendar, that would be about the 7th of... September 7th this took place. He got out of his car, stripped to his underpants. This is according to the state police in Pennsylvania. Broke into a home. When the resident of the home woke up during the break-in attempt, the man went down the block, or actually went to the house on the next block, taking off his underwear on the way, and he broke into that home, which was empty. He then walked up to the second floor of the home, jumped out of a window, and severely injured his arms and legs in the fall. Don't know how, but it was the injuries broke the skin in some way because he was bleeding profusely. Then he exited the home through the garage and approached two women walking down the street. And again, this was on Friday night. Tackled one of the two women and began gnawing on her head, all the while screaming like an animal. And this is according to a press release from the state police in Pennsylvania. The two women managed to escape and call police. State troopers responded, found the man lying in the road, covered in blood with severe injuries. And despite the loss of blood and the severe injuries, he lunged at a trooper. Another trooper deployed a stun gun. And even through this, he continued to act aggressively, punched an emergency medical technician treating his injuries before he was taken to a medical center in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And according to the state police, it is not clear what, if anything, the man was under at the time of the incident.
Chemically, you mean?
Chemically, yes. Yeah, because and that's the reason I bring forth this story, because they could not identify, at least at the time of the article, which was published 6 days after the incident. So 6 days later, they still didn't know if there were any chemicals involved in this incident, but that is the latest so-called zombie apocalypse update, this time from northeast Pennsylvania.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Did you see the story about the Federal Reserve having their own police force?
I did. I wanted to get to that. I was trying to think of a transition there, but
you're going after zombies, you need to train everybody, and I personally think that zombies might, you know, I don't know. They might go after a corporate bank.
And of course, the Federal Reserve is
equal opportunity. zombies.
Yeah. The
FDIC bond zombies.
The Federal Reserve Police Department, it was created as part of the Patriot Act back in 2001. And how we didn't learn about this for 11 years is a little surprising to me. But apparently, without any congressional hearings as to whether the Federal Reserve Bank needs its own police force, the Patriot Act authorized the Federal Reserve. In Section 364 of the Patriot Act, Uniform Protection Authority for Federal Reserve reads, law enforcement officers designated or authorized by the board or a reserve bank under paragraph 1 or 2 are authorized while on duty to carry firearms and make arrests without warrants for any offense against the United States committed in their presence. Such officers shall have access to law enforcement information that may be necessary for the protection of the property or personnel of the board or a reserve bank. But I'll repeat that section, that passage again. Make arrests without warrants for any offense against the United States committed in their presence.
How do they define offense?
That's a loophole large enough to handle a
truck. Yes, it is.
So the police officers, technically known as FRLEO, Federal Reserve Law Enforcement Officers, has its own police academies for training, patch and badges, uniforms, pistols, rifles, police cars, and the power to arrest any American or anyone in the United States without a warrant. So kind of bizarre. I wouldn't have expected the Federal Reserve to need its own law enforcement. I mean, if they need security, you know, that's what you have, security, private security firms for, I would think. Or because it's not an arm of the federal government.
No, it is not.
A privately owned bank.
Yes, it is. And, you know, the writer of this article says, according to a former St. Louis Federal Reserve law enforcement training instructor, the officers are trained on pistol, rifle, auto rifle, subgun, and shotgun with manufacturers encompassing Smith & Wesson, Glock, Remington, and Armalite. They are employed by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors in Washington, D.C., and are considered employees of the federal government since the board is a government entity. This is according to this former instructor. Each of the 12 Federal Reserve banks has settled law under Lewis versus United States confirms the Federal Reserve is a private corporation.
Yeah, the Board of Governors, though, is apparently considered part of the federal government. And
yes,
that's how they get around
that.
So they, the Board of Governors, employs the Federal Reserve law enforcement officers.
However, the writer of this this piece says an email to several of the Federal Reserve banks confirmed that they regard their FRLEOs to be privately employed by the bank.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting. And, you know, of course, this follows a story that we talked about a couple of weeks ago about, how was it, federal agencies like other federal departments having their own police forces that we knew nothing about. Why the what was it?
Was I there when we had this?
Well, the agencies, and I know that there were some who said, let's see if I can find this here. The article that we based our talk on was called "Who Does the Government Intend to Shoot?" Which we found at the Daily Caller, and this was written by a retired Army general named Jerry Curry. Wrote the piece. The Social Security Administration. That's it. We were questioning why the Social Security Administration would need to buy 174,000 rounds of hollow point bullets. And we did have a couple of listeners who responded and said, well, it's not unusual for these departments of the government to require that much. It's not unusual for law enforcement agencies to require that much ammunition because they use a lot of it during training. And, you know, to which I responded, well, why hollow points? Aren't those more expensive than just training ammunition? The answer, yes, but they're not spending their own money. They're spending your money. So, and plus there is some benefit to training with the actual ammunition you might be called upon to use in the field. That way you learn what its characteristics are, tendency to jam a gun, that sort of thing.
Okay, I can buy that.
The question, though, still remains, why? When we've got the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, which has, aren't the U.S. Marshals part of the ATF? I don't know.
You know, I honestly don't know.
But anyway, it would seem to us that there are plenty of law enforcement officers already in the employ of the United States government or in the large municipalities in which you're likely to find entities like a Federal Reserve Bank. I mean, if the Federal Reserve Bank is facing a threat from, say, a bunch of protesters in the city of Chicago or St. Louis, why not call in the St. Louis PD or the Chicago PD instead of calling out the FRLEOs or whatever they call them, FRLEOs or whatever they call them? And why does the Social Security Agency have officers carrying weapons that are you know, using hollow point bullets?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Anyway.
I did check, by the way, and apparently the DOJ, Department of Justice, oversees the DEA, ATF, and the U.S. Marshals, and the FBI, and ICE.
So we got plenty of agencies already within the government specifically tasked with law enforcement duties. It wouldn't seem the Social Security Administration would be one of those. That's just, that was all we were saying there. And the Federal Reserve Bank, even less so, especially since it's not officially owned by the federal government.
When I first saw that story today, I thought, okay, this is one of those internet rumors.
Mm-hmm.
Surely this isn't true, because if this goes back to the Patriot Act, we'd have all been talking about it.
Sure, yeah. But you read the act and
read
found
the
section,
act.
It's in there.
It is section 364 in the act.
Yeah.
And I link at the PID News post, my comment there is, here's where you can read the act.
Hmm.
And if you open it up in your own, you know, I open it actually in Acrobat, Adobe Acrobat on my desktop. So I was able to do a search and find section, and it's SEC 364. They don't spell out section, it's just SEC. So if you do a search for SEC 364, you will find it. And sure enough, they have their own police force.
Who knew? The 12.
I could have joined them. I feel like I've wasted my life.
Yeah. You know, they've got their own recruiting.
I know.
Literature and their own slogan, which, what is that nifty little marketing slogan to join the...
I saw that. I forgot to look.
Let's see. It's just, you know, doing a public service here. We may have a listener who'd
It's about respect and recognition from your peers. It's you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the official slogan of the Federal Reserve law enforcement officers.
Okay. The pay apparently is $32,458 to $40,573. Hmm. You know, I have to tell you that that's really not a lot of money.
No.
For putting your life on the line.
No.
And I assume that by being a police officer, you're guarding a bank, so to speak.
Right. And we're not disparaging anybody who chooses
as
a career.
No,
because,
I mean,
you're right. There are those who would be in situations.
We've got police officers in our families, and we're big supporters of police officers. I'm just surprised that this is a private corporation. These banks aren't part of the United States government.
No. The Board of Directors is, the Board of Governors is.
They're ostensibly, the Board of Governors is ostensibly supposed to be overseen by Congress, but Congress really has no powers when it comes to them.
No.
They sort of rubber stamp whatever they do.
No,
even though you see, you know, committee hearings where Ben Bernanke looks like he's really sweating bullets. What do I say to these guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it doesn't matter what he says.
Right.
They have no authority.
And Congress, Congress could not have apparently gone to Bernanke and said, we don't want you to implement QE Infinity, which is this move to buy mortgage-backed securities to the tune of $40 billion a month and pump essentially $40 billion of freshly printed money backed by...
This is money that's created out of thin air.
Into the American economy. But there was a Federal Reserve audit bill that passed the House back in July. I'm not as informed on this as I ought to be. So Congress may actually be showing signs of growing a pair. And
only.
Because this is one of those rare issues, like, say, warrantless wiretapping of American citizens or, you know, warrantless droning of American citizens that brings together the far left and the the libertarian, the far, you know, true conservatives and real progressives, and bring them together in support of a single issue. I'm getting the little spinning hourglass here.
Well, no, it's finally going through.
But anyway, I'm not sure that the Senate is going to go along with it just because the House passed the bill. The Senate would still have to appeal it. And I'm not seeing anything in the news that would indicate that that is actually
going to take
place. They would
sooner pass a kidney stone than have to pass that bill.
You're right. It would be less painful. So anyway, yeah.
I do love Ron Paul's comment on Ben Bernanke's announcement, saying that he was showing a detachment from reality.
That's a nice way of putting it, yeah. The Federal Reserve is basically out of bullets. They don't have any more ammunition to stimulate the economy. It seems to me, just with my very rudimentary understanding of how the economy works, this latest effort is only intended to reinflate the real estate bubble. And it doesn't need to be reinflated.
No. Oh, no.
The government distorted. And I know that there are a lot of people who are suffering because the decline in real estate values over the last 6 years has put a dent in what people thought was their savings or perhaps plans for retirement. It certainly is hurting a lot of school district and municipalities that depend on property tax revenues for operating expenses. But they were distorted, all out of shape, by putting more money into the market so that the ratio of dollars versus available housing was skewed. You had far more dollars chasing a relatively stable supply of housing through cheap loans, loans that were had lowered qualification requirements and higher loan-to-value being offered. I mean, there were, you remember during the boom in the early 2000s, banks offering 120% loan to value on a real estate loan.
I know,
loan?
Like that makes any sense.
Insane.
But many people were jumping on the bandwagon.
Sure.
I think
and
that
we were guilty of that too.
We took out a couple of refis so we could, you know, help to pay off credit cards and things like that. I think that the student loan market is The next big bubble.
And it's intended to put people essentially into indentured servitude to the banks, especially with student loans, because unlike a mortgage, which you can have wiped out through a foreclosure and then a bankruptcy, your student loan never, ever goes
away.
No,
in fact, you can, you know, it can be taken out of your tax refund. Mm-hmm. It can be taken out of your Social Security payment.
Yeah, that's the thing that's really hideous is you got some folks who are now depending on Social Security, retired depending on Social Security for living expenses, and the banks are still saying, we want the rest of your student loan paid.
Well, I've been trying to connect to the New York Daily News so I could show you the photo of Nikola, Vasily Nikula, but it's not connecting for some reason. I think our internet connection is...
gone flaky.
Look. You guys have seen enough.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to pay any attention to the pop-up windows, and if you're going to make fun of me when I put them up there,
that's right.
Don't blame me. Well, I'm just shutting down.
Cutting you off. And besides, it's almost an hour anyway.
Exactly.
Well, and that is the red herring. The video and this guy, Sam Basile or Nikuli, whatever his name is.
Whatever his name is.
In fact, he probably isn't even
the director. There's the story now that it's a softcore porn director who actually did it.
Mm-hmm.
Look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who directed it, who's behind it. This film couldn't possibly be the reason.
Yeah.
This film is like a cartoon.
And the announcement by the government of Egypt that they're going to indict 7 people, including American pastor Terry Jones, is simply to keep this meme in the media to keep our eyes off the ball. Oh, no, it has nothing to do with, it's all about this silly film. No. There's something going on over there, and it's related to, there are other issues at play. Let's just put it that way. And ultimately, it all comes to rest on the powers and principalities, the rulers of spiritual darkness. Those are the real enemies that we face.
They are indeed. Well, you spoke with a very interesting guest yesterday. Are you going to put his, conversation you had up on a VFTB sometime soon?
Yes. In fact, might even do that tonight. I just on the off chance that I'd get permission to do it, I produced up the audio. So all I need to do is just
upload it. And you have received that permission?
Yes. Interviewed a gentleman that Tom Horn has been talking about in his presentations on transhumanism for quite some time. His name is...
Hugo.
Oh, thank you. Hugo de Garis. Suddenly I blanked, and I've got it even written down right here. Hugo de Garis, who is a researcher.
He looked really cute, though.
The question mark appeared just suddenly over my head. Hugo de Garis is a fellow who has been researching a subcategory of artificial intelligence called evolvable hardware. And several years ago, he wrote a book called The Artelect War. And artelect is the word that he coined basically to condense the words artificial intellect. He is now concerned that the greatest threat that faces mankind is not availability of fresh water. It's not over who gets to control the oil. It's essentially looking at the future and seeing the threat posed by either the Terminators or the Cylons or the Cybermen. Essentially, he believes we're on the verge of creating an artificially intelligent machine or a group of them that will then determine, once they become self-aware, that we are the problem and try to wipe us out. And he sees what he calls a giga-death war, billions of deaths occurring before the end of the 21st century. As the struggle for species dominance takes place between humanity and our artificial children.
You know, that I've been reading his stuff for a while, and when you said that you were going to be speaking to him, I knew that the name sounded really familiar, but I don't always memorize the name of an author. Mm-hmm. It just sort of somewhere in my brain, you know, stamps in there, and I don't go back in those drawers most of the time. There are cobwebs back there and scary things. So, but it did sound familiar. And after you had the conversation, I thought, I know who that is. Mm-hmm. He writes articles all the time. And I can't wait to hear the interview.
He's a very charming fellow. He has a different worldview, obviously. He thinks that the solution to the problem is a benevolent global government that will... recognize the threat posed by creating an artificial intelligence in time to rein it in before we create something that could destroy us.
He may have just described the Antichrist government.
Yes, exactly.
A benevolent global government.
Yes, exactly. And so I didn't challenge him on that because I didn't feel that was the place. I wanted to get his ideas, bring his ideas out. I also recorded the video, which will be part of a forthcoming documentary being produced by Tom Horn. And Tom will get exclusive use to that video, such as it is. I mean, it was a Skype connection, but he will be using that. But Hugo does a very good job of expressing his concern over where this is headed. And then privately, you know, when we weren't recording, he asked me what my thoughts were. And honestly, I think that the Artelect War may be, you know, described by prophecy-believing Christians as Armageddon.
Mm-hmm.
Or as the war that takes place between the powers and principalities who convince mankind that Christ returning with the host of heaven are an army of invading aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. It could be the fake war. Mm-hmm. Some call it the Ezekiel 38 or mm-hmm. the Psalm 83 war or both that culminate in the false return of Christ mm-hmm. when, in fact, it's actually the Antichrist.
So this is something we'll have to talk about more in the future. Again, I didn't go down that path with Hugo de Garis because that really wasn't the point of the interview. It was to find out from somebody who's done extensive amounts of research in this field and he, you know, what his thoughts are, what his concerns are, where he sees the crisis developing. And he said his main concern right now is trying to convince people who are working toward the singularity that they may be dooming humanity to a horrific future. And he was familiar with all of the examples I cited, you know, the Cybermen and the mm-hmm. And even the really bleak and depressing Harlan Ellison short story, I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream,
oh, yes.
in which the global supercomputer that is killed off humanity except for a small group of survivors that it tortures for its own pleasure, which is, and this supercomputer has decided to call itself I Am. Yeah, which Christians should understand. So anyway,
we'll end there.
Yeah, I'll post that at View from the Bunker, and I consider that one of the more important interviews that I've done over the 2 years or so. That
I think so, too. I hope that you get to have more chats with him.
Plan on it. He doesn't speak much Chinese, and he lives in China. And he said it's nice to actually, he said he considered the interview as much a social outing as an interview.
You don't speak Chinese either.
So, yeah, we had that in common. So it was great. All right. Well, thank you for coming along with us on this hour-long stream of consciousness discussion. Until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear, a better day is coming.